Henry Bremer was born in Hanover, Germany, and immigrated to Kansas with his parents when he was 1 year old. He spent 10 years growing up in a dugout in Kansas, burning buffalo bones for fuel, until drought and hailstorms drove his family to Idaho. He has vivid memories of both the 1893 Depression and the hard times of the 1930s. As times changed, Henry helped in many ways to bring improvements to the area.
How was it that the REA worked?
Well, the government, they went to work, and it cost us, I think, I'm pretty sure, $5 a piece if we was willing to go in on it, to connect that with it. So we had to get so many signers of these farmers here till before they would build it, when we could get it. I worked on that awful hard. And so I got a write-up here in one paper, REA paper, and my name and my pictures in there. Yeah. Everything.
Like, they said the farmers would object and said they wouldn't want to mortgage their farm to the government. Why would they think they had to do that?
Well, they figured the government was going to take over. They were scared of the government to ever get in on this stuff. It was one of the finest things that ever happened. That's why we got our electricity and so on all over here and the farms, you see. And that was in 1937 or 8, when in the fall of the year we got it. After we got that all built and we got it started and got it had it built, then the farmers couldn't get it fast enough. They all wanted to be for it. So we got that built, and I think it was one of the finest things we ever had. What we done here. They still got it, you know. We supposed, at that time they said, we 20 years and we would be paid out on it. But that thing never materialized. The government still does. They lend money to the REA and so on and put branch lines out and so on. Because it was complicated to the farmer, because we here had farmer lines, phone lines, and you know how they keep it up, brush and everything, and long fences and so on, and half of the time we only could get somebody. And then we had Sentels, one in Cameron, one in Leland.
Sentels?
Yeah, Sentels, you know, where they had the...
Oh, Sentels.
Yeah.
Well, they had people there that if you wanted to go to places, they had to get them for you.
You had to call those Sentels in these towns. Uh-huh. So that's the way it started out. And so, of course, when this electric line came in, they had to get a metallic system in it, double wires, you know, and up to date. And it all cost us $50 a piece, and that was a hard one. There's still some people at Southwick that I couldn't get out in the back toward the mountains there. I bagged those boys. I've been over that times and times again. No, they're all dead now. But they still haven't got their telephones. Huh. They just got the telephones between themselves, that's all. They never did get it in there. And I tried my darndest to get it in there, and it was complicated, because they'd fight you, and so on, and so forth. And I was in on early years already, early years, on a mail route. The radar mail was, all with our post offices, Leland, Cameron, Tron, Southwick. And then we had our mail carriers later on. We didn't have them at first. We had to go to the post office to get our mail early years. So I was heard that we get ruler out some. And so, boy, they fought on that. Most of them didn't want it. And leave everything the way it was. But we finally got it. So our post offices went out, and we get our mail direct every day and so on. Otherwise, it was maybe once or twice a week. Some on the upper end of the above Southwick there, they would get it about once a week, and so on.
Were you an early mail carrier too?
No, I was no mail carrier. But it was just the ones, there was three of us. There was Roy Southwick, and myself, and Doc McKeever's dad. So, what was his name? Charlie McKeever?
His name was Charlie.
Yeah, I think. We three was the ones that started out on it. And then we got up to Cameron, but they was the mobs. They thought it was awful for us people to say that we would get a mail out from Kendrick every day. They couldn't figure that out. So, but it progress, you couldn't stop it. It go ahead. And we got it finally. But it took several years. Oh, I was in on everything, on the road business. Building that road up here, the governor. Ross, that was in at that time, Idaho here. I made three trips to Boise with a delegation. And we were supposed to get a number one road up on the Rancho Delta, that road now between Kendrick and Southwick, highway number 7. But then these people down here jumped in and they got the Bear Ridge Road, which they needed more than we did. They had really a rough grade from down there. Have you, you've never been over that road?
Yes, I have.
That used to be twisted around and around, and you didn't have no turnouts once in a while, and you happened to be in between turnouts, you didn't know where to go. And we had to back up and push our wagons over, or wherever we would get the cars in. They started in on the cars. Then they started in, and they took the governor, he came up here, and took him over that road there, and it was rough, it was muddy and everything else.
Mm-hmm.
And he really saw what they needed, so he built that one up there. And then when we came back again to build one up there, right, they didn't have too much money left, he says, and so on. So the first thing they done, the county helped us, because we were in bad shape on traffic there.
Which county was that?
Huh?
Which county was that?
Well, Northport County, and we had a road district. See, good road districts like they used to have here. And we had a till our crossroad, and us above the upper end of the county of Southwick, we was on the county. So there was the friction there. We couldn't do nothing to the lower end here. They wouldn't give us gravel, they wouldn't do nothing. They said they didn't have the money. Well, they didn't. They was organized too small, didn't have enough variation there, you see. Well, then, finally, we started to crush up a chocolate. We took it out from the town to the crossroad, and then we asked that we would donate. We donated everything up there. We didn't get paid for it. I hauled rock on that road with four horses and for days. And after we got that finished, we said to this district here, we'll help you gravel this road so we can get out when it's wet. Because the cars were in then, I had a car already. Finally got a truck and everything. So we started, and we worked 2 days and made quite a stretch down here. You think we got to get one out of this district that would help us? Not one. So we all dropped it. We all quit. We went down to the county here, and we told them what happened. And we'd like to have this. So they finally dug up the money, and they got
it. Listen, let me talk a minute. Have you had dinner?
Not yet, no.
Well, listen, you two can keep on talking. I'm going to fix a little something and leave.
Thank you.
Because later on, it'll have going to have company, maybe about 3 o'clock or so, and I want to get through.
Okay.
So you two can talk till I say morning and miss you.
Okay. Well, were you still living then in the place you were raised up in Southwick?
No. See, where I was raised in Cameron. And then I farmed at Cameron for 3 years. Then we went to Canada, my brother, August, and myself. And we bought a half a section of land. Oh, 17 miles from Lethbridge. And then we had a snowstorm the 2nd of September. And
what year was that?
In 1906 or 5 or 6. Mm-hmm. 6, I think it was. Because in 1906 we pulled out for Montana. And everything snowed under. We didn't get no crop at all. So we pulled out of there. I think I told you this story once. That section we sold after a while to a real estate man. Noble was his name. And the town of Noble is on that half section now. Railroad came right through it, you see. So if we'd hung on to it, maybe we'd been all right. But we didn't. We sold out and homesteaded in Montana. And so we got back here, and I did, my brother did. I got back in here in 1913. You see that? And I bought the folks from there. And after a while, I sold that with the First World War was on. And then I bought up at Southwick. 106 acres. So of course we've spread quite a little bit. We've got quite a lot more land. Got some on there, we've got some down here. Several places took a south ocean. So on. So we made progress here. Got along pretty good. We had some rough times, hard times, depressions. We take when 30 and 32 hit there, the depression hit there, but it worked. It was at the time that they lost their places. Her brother lost everything he had. My brother, he had lost everything in Montana. Really.
In the depression?
Huh?
In the depression?
Yeah, well, no, he was drought. Drought, because they had to. I still raised the crop in 13 in Montana, but I was out here already, and I had bought it, as I said, 160 acres right above his half section. I had sold my half section. But we were in together on it, and he didn't want to sell, and he figured he could get more out of it than $45 an acre. I figured it was a good buy. So I sold mine and then bought the state land right north of. That's here, on the south end of his. And we had 150 right in the road. So I sold that for $40 an acre, and I had plowed up half of it, and had a crop on it, got $800 out of it. That was the last crop they raised there. And that year I had that crop, though the hailstorm came through there, and cut 10 foot off a just in the corner of my field, everything down, and then drive straight a half a mile down through my brother's and took everything.
Oh.
Yeah. Now he didn't raise nothing, and from there on, then that douse hit, and had it there. So he finally sold out and got $3,000 out of it, and then the rest of it never was paid. The whole thing was. So he came here and he bought that 160 up there. It that time, and he still paid his war prices, $20,000 for that 80, or 160, way out of line. And so he didn't have any money, so I went in with him. I bought half into it. Well, he says, I can't pick up my end. I haven't got no money anymore. So I bought him out. And then the day of Christmas struck again, after that. And that, those 30s there, from 29 on to in the 30s, 34, 5, hard times, I think. There was no money. That's when I sold wheat down here for 21 cents a bushel. Beans wasn't quite a cent a pound. Why, you couldn't come out on it. I was farming 400 acres. I lost $720, good money, because I hired my help beans. We used to do it the hard way then. We'd cut them and we'd have a bunch of kids, 10 or 12 of them, tie them or hoe them or something, all of that. And, we didn't have the expenses they do now, but it was just enough for that whole business there, that it was my expenses, the $750. It didn't come out of my crop because I couldn't get it. And then the wheat, of course, was 50, 60 cents, 70 cents, and so on. And we didn't make much money. It just wasn't there. Then, when the Second World War, things started to pop up again. We got along pretty good for a while there. And so in 41 we quit. She had the arthritis of that, and we couldn't go on anymore. As for, I was only 60 years old, I could have gone on, but she just couldn't make it anymore. So we spent quite a little time with the old women, so on. But after that, well, the thing, when it improved and things went on, well, I made more money not farming than the farming. So that's the way it worked.
What was it like in Cameron when you were a kid?
Huh?
What was it like in Cameron when you were a child?
So life? Oh, well, we, the only thing, we were living down a 5-acre tract, and we raised all our own gardens and so on. And Father, he was gone most of the time. Like I said, he went to Genesee and everywhere else. He was carpenter, building. And there was lots of building going on. He could build. Of course, he built cheap there. Now you take our first church. My father built that camp. I think it cost somewhere around $500-$600, because it was a smaller church. 24 by, I don't know, about 16 or something, or maybe it was a little bit longer. And then the second church we built a pretty good big church there then. That was 1,400. And then after that, they built a new one here, and this one was built in 1903, that second church we had. That was $1,400. We go back in the Southwick there, there were sawmills in there, two or three of them, different ones. You buy lumber for $8 a thousand. And some of it, if it was a little off grade, you maybe get it for $4 or $5 an acre, or a thousand. So no wonder we could build cheap. Now this church they build now. Well, that cost just right around $100,000. So that's the change. The thing from where we came up was labor, like us children here, I worked for 25 cents a day, old, all day long in the bean field. We raised lots of flax here at that time. And us kids, they'd hire a bunch of us kids here. We'd go through there day and night. We had a foreman there. And he said, go ahead, go ahead. And we got 35 cents a day for that.
But what were you doing in the flax?
Pulling out weeds. Had to weed it out, you know. We couldn't leave the weeds in. We had lots of wild oats at that time already. And pig weeds, lime tortoise, whatever there was. We'd take a step through there, maybe 20, 30 feet or more, for how many kids there were, you know. And we'd go through one way and the other, up and down, till we get a field clean, then we go to the next one. So that was our wages. Then after I got older in Canada, and also my brothers, I started to work out by the year, or not the year, month, at least month. I first job I hired out for 9 months for $160 a year, that 9 months. That was through harvest and all. So there was another fella, he was a pal of mine, and he'd hired out the other fella, and he gave him $150 for 9 months, and he was awful mad about it, but he stuck it out. He at least stayed with him. But that was our wages at that time. So, of course, when 93, or, no, yeah, you know, 1893, the year after we came here, when we had that depression, there was no money. There was absolutely no money. My father worked out. He never saw money or so on. We get wheat flour or bacon or something butchering, so on. Something to eat, that was all. It was barter trade, you might call it. No money. So that then finally improved after the reservation opened up here, and part of moved away and moved over on the reservation and took some kids and so on. Most of them made good out there. Some of them went broke during the depression then.
Did the reservation opening up help break the depression here?
No, yes. That helped quite a lot. See, that was all new buildings going up in there. Every farmer had to build and so on. These people were here, had their home. We had to haul them over. I hauled many a load, the four-horse team load over from Cameron to Gifford. I'd go down this Clearwater Hill through Leland, then down off of the point, and then, of course, that road just go this way, round. Then there was places going down steep, and people go down. That was like rain. So I rough-locked my load and so on, so the brakes wouldn't hold it, I was afraid. And then with the four-horse team, down I go, straight down off the hill. And I hauled a good many loads over there. So it gave us work there, and that was a little money circulating then. We got a little. Maybe it wouldn't be much, it'd be a dollar. Just like having to throw those hogs there. Of course, that was way before. That was when we were small. I was only 14. I drove those hogs over here. It took us two or three days, and then had to stay there a whole week, and he gave me a 50 or 8 bits for it. See?
That was when you drove some hogs to... Yeah,
to Nurseport.
Yeah. How many hogs did you take over there?
14, and we had butchered 14. See, they traded in, he smoked the hams and bacon and so on, and he hauled those over there, but then people buy them over there, you know. Because that was before the reservation opened, so. But nevertheless, people were getting ready. They knew it was going to open in a year or so. They was getting ready and picking out their land already so they could know where they would go, and they filed on it, see. That they get in first. Whoever got in first, well, he was it. because lots of times it happened too that fellas figured they had a place there and go in trying to follow them, it was gone already. And that's the way it worked. That's about the life we went through here in Canaan.
What was that little rhyme you told me about Cameron during the 93 Depression?
Huh?
Remember that little rhyme you told me about?
Oh, yeah. That one, the Cameron there. It said the Cameron Town, the Bremer Street, and the Royalty Hotel, and nothing to eat. Let's see, I got to take a drink of water.
Okay.
My throat's getting dry.
How would your dad get from, say he was building in Genesee, how would he get over to Genesee from Cameron?
Well, we didn't have a chance that somebody go over with the team, but it was most horseback they was going. The roads, they were poor, and someplace there were no roads, you might call it. And these grades here, they were just so you could get by. Because if you meet somebody lots of times, you had to set your rig over down off of the hillside to put it in, and we could buy our hubs rubbed together. And if we happened to see one another and we had to turn out, we'd turn out and stop until the other fellow came by. So that's the way it was. But we walked. Now, my daddy and myself, I walked over with him many times, carried. We'd come down here and stop here for dinner, maybe, and then the next afternoon we walk over. Boy, when I get over the last hump there and see the town of Genesee, was I glad I was all in by that time.
Were you carrying his tools over?
His tools, because we had a sack and we put the tools in there. Well, when we built our home in Cameron, that was the second home. That was the last home we had. That building is still there. And it's been moved, though. It was sold. And been moved, but it's still there. Just about the way we built it. And as far as nails and stuff, we had to get hard stuff, whatever it was. We walked downtown and carried home. And I helped out. Nails and what have you, we put it on our shoulders and away we go. So
that was sort of different than when you're in Kansas, wasn't it? Because there wasn't much wood to build with in Kansas.
No,
was
in
there?
Kansas, that was perfect. Absolutely. The only place was that was on along the little streams and so on, and it was poplar. And blues and some blues where the water was, but the prairie was absolutely prairie. Buffalo trails, and the buffaloes that roamed there, they had trails from there clear into Canada. I followed them clear up into Canada. We used to go up there back and forth from Montana and western Kansas. We went clear up to the Dakotas and in there. Buffalo trails all along. And then the Hudson Bay came in there. That was the Astis from New York. They was after the fur. And that was all the Indians. They had their hunter there, you know, and had their meat and so on. And it was all right. They came in there and they slaughtered them by the thousand to get their fur.
Do you remember those times when they were slaughtering the buffalo?
Well,
were you there then?
No, the buffalo were all gone by that time already. And we got in there. So then, when we got there, what we saw of it, you could look over the prairie when the sun was shining and the white bones were just glittering all over where they slaughtered them. And we had no wood. We had that as our firewood. We'd pick up those bones and burn them in winter, and the buffalo chips. That was our...
Buffalo bones burn, though, huh?
Well, they burn. Yeah, if you had these buffalo chips in with it, you see. Then we put them together, and they burn. That's your life. That was all we had. Maybe we sometimes... Fellow that had a team out there then, why, he'd bring a load of these willows and stuff in and so on, and pick up along the creek, but he had the little... No, those were...
What was your house built out of then?
Huh?
What was your house built out of then?
Out of that house. We dug into the hillside. And then you could plow those buffalo grass and up, and you had the finest shots, you know. You stick together and build up in front, just with these sod here. All we had door on the outside one way, and two little windows. The rest of it was all dark in there. There was no windows, nothing in there. And then in winter, this was then we was in the draw.
The place was down in the draw?
When the, we was in the draw, and then the snow would drift right over. We had always had a big scoop shovel right on the inside, and the door opened to the inside, so it would be outside, and then we had to shovel out. It was solid, drifted full, you see.
Well,
Dad always had a big shovel in there. And out into Montana, in a logging camp. Some fellas from the east there, they got in there and wanted to use that timber there in Montana. But there was no railroad in there. We had to drive in, well, it's about 30 miles by land and 20 some odd miles by water, the boat. And we got in there, and we had 12 foot of snow. That is in the mountains. We stayed on the lake.
This is in Canada?
No, this was Montana. We were in Canada.
Uh-huh.
We were still living in Canada. There was no work in the prairie, in the farming community there, you know, for winter. So we went out to this logging camp. We stayed in there 6 months. Never got out, never went out. There were 10 men went in there, of us. Into the tent, shoveled out the snow and so on, and pitched our tent, put an old wooden stove in the center, and that's where we were sleeping in. And then we cut logs and stuff, and built us the bunkhouse and cookhouse and everything else in the morning. Quite a building, and we got that all done and finished up. We made our own roofing, cut lengths 4-6 feet of poles, and we hew them out and we turn them upside down, you know,
mm-hmm.
And so lay them on the roof. That it's something like a patty. So we got that in there, and then we got the cutting timber, logs, and we went out from the lake. You couldn't get out, you had 12 feet of snow, but it wasn't too far out. We had some timber, what we could cut was dry timber. We cut that right off on top of the snow, so next spring we had stumps 12 foot high. And the other ones we had to shovel out.
Mm-hmm.
You had to cut them down low. So we kept the cutting, and the idea I didn't like, because we had no horses, we had nothing to drag those logs out. So we went to work, and we throwed our trees either way, crosswise or any way we could. We never trimmed them up. We cut out the saw lengths, and there we lay. The next spring, they had all that mess up to clean up after the snow.
Mm-hmm.
So we got out of there in May sometime. I don't remember what day it was. We got out, And when we got out off of the lake and got out on the prairie, we saw cattle that were killed, and they were around the sloughs there, ponds, there was the sloughs, there were the water was. They were laying just thick, you could jump from one another all day. That was a bunch of fellas that came up from Texas, big ranches, and drove their cattle in there in that time of the year. I don't know why it was, but I think it was, they figured it was early in the spring. I know in May when we got out, right? They had come in there, and then they got this big snowstorm and that cold weather, you see, and everything froze. There was no water, nothing, and the cattle all packed out. I wouldn't want to say bad, they're all frozen. Yeah, and so I went out of there. My brother and myself, we pulled out in the spring. And a new company took over then, and they cleaned up that mess. I was on one drive to drive these logs down 23 miles from the river. First, we had 6 miles of the river. We flowed them down into a very big boom. Then we closed that boom, put a little motorboat onto it, and then drag them down.
Across the lake.
Across the lake. Then the mill was down on the Belly River there, a ways, and whenever we got to the end there, to the river, where it was too swift, we wouldn't go ahead of the boat. So we're supposed to open the boom and then take our boom and drag it down to the mill and cut them off, you see, so the dogs would stop. But we got too close. The fella that there was greenhorns out of there, they got too close to the river, and we didn't get our boom out, and our logs got out first, and we couldn't get the boat in there, and we couldn't get our boom down, and everything went down the river, and they lost that whole boom. So I heard afterwards that some of them drift to the side, they hauled them back for miles with a wagon to get those dirt out of there.
The idea was that you push the logs up at the head, leave them just floating in the lake there while you took the boom down?
No, the boom, you see the boom, there was all the logs were all in the boom.
Right, right.
And then we were supposed to open that boom, see there were long logs, and then holes bored through it and then chains put together, you see. And we just opened the boom and leave our logs up in the lake. But he got too close where the suction was too big.
Right, right. You're supposed to leave the logs in the lake while you take the boom logs down.
We was taking the boom logs down. That was our plan. So he got in too close, this fella. He was a head man. We none of us was loggers.
Mm-hmm.
He was just a common fella. So he said, now open your boom. And he said, take the boom down. So we opened the boom and we started out, and our logs kept coming faster than the boom did. And away they went. So they got in there so thick in the river, the logs, that we couldn't begin to go anywhere. So we just had to lost the whole boom. But they hauled some of them back, I heard. But they went broke finally. So afterwards I heard they went broke. We never went back in there. But that was quite an experience in there. I tell you, with that much snow, to get up in there and not a thing built or anything, just in a tent. And it was pretty rough in there, with all that snow in there.
When did you first start to farm on your own?
When I was 21 years old. When I became 21 years. I had worked out before. And the money they had, I paid off on the folks' place. In down here. I helped them pay it off the $400 I had. Because, where I told you, these 9 months where I worked for $160, I had $155 less than that 9 months were. Of course, Mother, I say, she patched up our clothes and so on and help us out on that. But that money I put into the place there, the folks, and helped them pay off their bill. Well, then during that time, when I started in farming at 21, I was only 16 years old and I had this deal, this $160 for the 9 months. I only was 16 years old, so when I became 21, they went to work. They had made enough money too, so they gave me the $400 to start farming. That's where I started. So I bought the team of horses. And I bought 3 horses. And plow, harrow, this, all I needed, second-hand stuff I could pick up. That's how I started. So I farmed 3 years here, rental farm. Then we took off for Canada. I quit and I sold out. And when I got through those 3 years, I had $400 left. So I got my money back.
Right.
<It was all. laughs> Well, you go down here to the warehouse, good grief, that wheat was no price. You couldn't come out on it because we sold wheat there for over 50 cents. And when it got up to 70, they had land, that's a lot of money, you see. But still, you couldn't come out on it. Didn't make any sense. At least I didn't. So I just saw it wouldn't work by renting land and farming that. Oh, I had quite a bit of land, more than I should have for the outfit I had. And that was in 1903, 1904. Fall of 1904, I went out. I went to China. So that settled it for here. And then of course we were gone to 1913 and I came back and that's when we started here again. But in Montana I made good. I done well. One of my brother. He went well.
Did you go back to wheat farming when you came back here from Montana?
Yeah, I went. First, I bought the place only 40 acres, but they had nice buildings. I gave them $5,000 for that, and they had 5 acres of prune orchard and so on. There was quite a little money in that, and we had a big dryer on it, you know, I dried prunes and so on. And in fruit business. And
how did a big prune dryer work?
Oh, that, you had to get wood and have a big furnace, big fireplace under it. And on top, you have trays. I've got some trays laying out here, a couple of them there. And you shut those in just like this together with a little space in there where the heat can go through it and under it. And you have, I don't know how many trays you're in. I never found them. I think there were 10 in a row when I was 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 50, there must have been over 100 trains in there. And then you have to dip your prunes. Go ahead, add a tub, and you put for strong lye water. And have a fire and then keep it hot, boiling hot. Then they had a big dipper with the screens on it. And a rope and a pulley that goes up, went upstairs. So we dip them down in there so they hide the cracks, so they dry, you see. And then we turn upstairs and they put them on the
plate. In the lye water? So the
Yeah, in the lye.
Did you wash them off after you put them in the lye?
Well, yeah, you rinse them off. You dip them in the cold water then. Mm-hmm. And after that is all we would do. Just rinse them off. You dip them first two or three dips in that live water, and that hot and live water would crack. The high ball would be cracked. And then dump them right into the cold water to rinse them off and so on. Draw them upstairs and they put them on the trays and in the dryer.
Mm-hmm.
So, all first years it wasn't, I didn't get too much. I think I sold them for 6 and 8 cents a pound. But then the World War, when it came on, things popped up and I got 18 cents a pound. That's when I made a little money. Right? So, of course, then by the time the end of the war ended in 1918, why, my neighbor came there, his buildings were all gone to pieces and he wanted to buy mine. He had land all around me. And I had this place up at Sussex already. So I says to him, I'll trade with you. And I'll stay here and you give me your land. He said, I won't do that. I don't buy it. Yours. He says, what do you want for it? I said, $9,000. He was steady to buy. He says, I'll give you $8,500 cash. So I thought that's how much took him up. So I made $3,500 on the place, so that was bigger than that. So I put that all in this upper place and had to buy my brother out there. He couldn't make it. So I put the place all by myself. But then I had a hard time with it. If these depressions hadn't hit, we'd made it all right. But I was lucky at that time. In 19. We forgot to $2.24 a bushel. And I went to work, I had a little bit, 30 acres maybe that year. And I saw work for $2.24. So my neighbor came over and he says to me, can you let me have $500 or $5,000? I says, for what? He says, I'm going to buy that place over there. So I says to him, why don't you sell your wheat? He has 10,000 bushels of wheat. I says, 2.5? I says, boy, you're clear and you've got money ahead. I says, don't do that. I says, sell. We're not going to get this price all gone. No. Nope. So finally I talked him into it and he left.
Mm-hmm.
And by and large it wasn't towards evening, he came back. He says, I changed my mind. I want to borrow this money. So he did. I let him have it. And then he went to work and hard times came. He sold his wheat for 98 cents a bushel.
Mm-hmm.
And so when that happened, well, he didn't come out. So he put the second mortgage on that same place, borrowed mm-hmm. from another fellow. So I was sitting pretty, I had the first one.
Mm-hmm.
So but he lost. He lost everything he had. He had a different land.
Just because he was trying to hold on to his wheat.
Yeah. Well, her brother done the same thing. And there were others that done that. But they figured they wanted a dollar and $2.25. Now, what was one penny to them?
Mm-hmm.
There was people on the reservation on Nurse Purse Prairie done the same thing. They lost everything they had.
Mm-hmm.
Just on the counter, pulled them over, and then the depression hit.
Well, how did you mostly support yourself through the depression?
Oh, well, we farmers, we done all right. We raised everything.
Mm-hmm.
I had hogs. I butchered my own hogs. I butchered my beef. And I had plenty of cattle and hogs and plenty of chickens. And what we raised, we had big gardens, so on. We was living all right as far mm-hmm. as living was concerned. Why, when that First World War was on, and the meat prices, you see, they had to have quotas on it. You could only buy so much of it, and so on. Well, these town people, they hollered their heads off. I gave lots of my you could buy meat. You had to have tickets or something like that. And I gave them away to those town people because I didn't need the meat.
Oh, ration tickets.
Yeah, ration tickets. So we farmers, we lived good because we weren't bothered with nothing like that. And that. Because we just had our own stuff. The Dickens was all right. They couldn't tell us you can't do this and you can't do that. We had our liberty on that to do our own. Nowadays, you can't butcher your own beef or anything anymore. And so on. It's different. No, we didn't. The farmers didn't suffer, excepting those that lost their places. But it was their own fault. But you know, people will do that. Now, you take this, but we've got it right now. If they don't watch out, there'll be lots of them go broke in this crisis.
Mm-hmm.
Because now, I read a piece in the Sunday paper here. The farmers, they do their own business. The government is getting out of money altogether. It's one of the things they didn't. I never approved it. Because they got the family farm they figure on, they want to get rid of. Now, we've got this agriculture man, he's working for them. And those people, they got all the money. The government dished it out to them.
Mm-hmm.
And so on, and these other smaller farmers, they just don't know how to get anything. So you have to farm big, or you make anything. Well, there was people drawing $100,000 more than that, $200,000 out of the government, you see.
Mm-hmm.
Well, that wasn't right. Now we set the limit on that. This law just went through lately, $20,000. And I think that's the highest they can get. But they're out now. So next year, now this coming year, they can plant all the wheat they want.
Mm-hmm. That's good.
Yeah. If we don't get another drought, we may make it all right. But say, haven't we have another year like this? We wouldn't raise much next year here because we have no submarine. And we wouldn't get any more snow and any more rain another year like that. We have a disaster on our hands.
You said during the Depression that you lost, what was it, $750 in farming?
I lost $750 in good money. I told my people I was farming 400 acres. I had
Well, If you lost that money, what did you do to make it up? How did you?
Well, I didn't pay interest on my. I had a. Oh, I don't know just exactly how many thousand dollars. I must have had either $9,000 left on the place to pay. You see, I didn't pay out on all that either. But nevertheless, I had some money laying in the bank. I had to have so much profit all the time. I went to work and told them, take my crop. And he says, take it. No, we don't want it. It won't pay out. So, of course, I had to sell, and I sold what I could.
Mm-hmm.
And it didn't pay out. I didn't make enough. So all my expenses and everything that I had, I lost $750.
Mm-hmm.
Short. And that's when they tumbled like bees in places, the farmers all went back. They lost everything. I at least didn't lose my place.
Did you also did you supplement your income by selling milk or anything
more
like that? During?
We sold cream, and we raised quite a few turkeys and so on. Our taxes was paid out of the barnyard lot. That's where we got our taxes paid. But my interest, I let slip by for a year. Then, was it? It wasn't the next year. It was a year or two afterwards. The crisis came up again a little bit and so on. And I had an awful big crop of beans that one year. You know, we used to get 3 or 4 sacks of beans to an acre. I had 8 that year. But it happened to be a perfect year for beans. And we was getting a pretty good price, so I had $3,000 worth of beans. Well, that just went dropping a rock in the ground and said, boom, it couldn't pay it off. So that helped. So then, from there on, I had pretty good sales.
What was it that caused your dad to move here from Germany?
It was the people, they came out here, and different ones. There were different ones out here already from Western Canada that lost their places there on the county towers, and they moved out, and they came out here with us. And then, of course, correspond together. They want him to come out and see it, and so he came out in 1891, a year ahead of us.
Uh-huh.
And he worked here. Still, that old church is still standing there. And of course, myself and Whitman there, we built an addition to it, and these ladies ain't tall out of it, and they have the sails in there and so on. But the old building is still standing there. I don't know how long it'll last, but that's old. Excepting what we built on, but that's a good many years ago already. When we came back the first year, we built the addition to it. Then there's several houses in Leland that's still standing. So several of them are tore down. And I suppose this is when I'm over at Genesee. I know there's one on that rock there, a couple of plates. That's still standing. They remodeled it though. It's in the same shape yet, it's just on the outside, and so I have to put on new siding or something, and that house is still standing. And several barns are still standing. There's still the barn on her brother's place that the father built, that's still there. And there's Wilkins, Herman Wilkins. They got a granger, and that's the first thing they built there. They couldn't afford a house, and they had an upstairs to it, and that's what they lived in. And they had 12 children.
Upstairs in the granary?
In the granary. And that's where they lived in. Till they got ready to build a new house. And that house is still standing up there. It's been remodeled too, and so on. So one of our nieces married that fella that's living now, and she lives in that house.
Well, they left Kansas because of the drought there. Because the homesteading situation just fell apart in Kansas, or what?
Oh, yes. Yes, everything fell apart there. They went broke. The first generation all went out. Just like Montana, where we in the basin, Judas Basin, where we were. They had big crops there, and so on. And then, after I got out of there, why, the thing went to pieces. See, that runs in cycles. We had about a 7-year cycle there, that we had plenty of rain in there. And things worked out perfect. I raised a crop every year in there. And then from 13 on, it just says boom. All the settlers there then, the people that bought in that country from Minnesota, Iowa farmers and everything, sold all their stuff back east, and went in there. There isn't one of them left on the farm. They're all gone. Of course, that generation, most of them is dead now. But then the second generation came in. Then this tractor business started. And they got the raising this turkey red wheat and fall wheat. And their land, they could farm better. They started strip farming and so on. They made a big money. They're doing all right. And Western Kansas was the same way. Cattlemen bought practically, or they'd buy a piece of homesteaders that go broke and so on for little or nothing. So they had 5,000-6,000 acres, you know, for their grain. Then the farmers got in there and started in there after that and raising this turkey red wheat, the winter wheat. It's the biggest wheat country there is in Kansas today. They made it. But with us, it was an experiment. We didn't know what we done. We planted sod corn and stuff. Well, it just didn't make
it. Your father wasn't really much of a farmer.
No, he was no farmer. Everything he had done, he had it plowed and so on, and he'd work as a carpenter, you see. And he'd hire and have a patch built up, of course. It didn't cost much then, because of the other price, but nevertheless, he just didn't know how to farm, and he didn't like farming. So when he came here, he wouldn't buy any land. He just bought land here and come out about finding land. But he did, of course, he didn't have money, just like I said. He got $400 for that half section he had there. It was a pretty good building and water, windmills, everything on it. Uh-huh. And that's all he got.
Mm-hmm.
Because the other $400, he sold for $800. He didn't get that because drought, and just sort of couldn't make it. His wife died too then, a year or so after we were gone. And he was getting older too, so he pulled